Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
So come on in, Rick and John, throwing our midday party here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the show. We're settling in here to the Kia Studios, and do we have a question for you? We started this yesterday, and we are going to dive in today with your calls from the Rise Up Nation in terms of Julio Jones. Terrell Owens had some awesome remarks about Julio that kind of opened my eye, talking about where's the chemistry for Matt Ryan after like 10 years together. So we are going to dive in and have a focus group, if you will, John. Who's to blame for the rotten red zone stats for Julio Jones? Mm-hmm. Is it Julio? Is it Ryan? Is it Sark? Or is it the double teams? And I put a poll out yesterday around dinner time, John. The results are amazing to me. I did not anticipate the percentages that we're getting right now. So we're going to talk about that with the Peeps. What's up, dude?
How you doing this morning? You good?
Chilling, man.
Me too. I guess what I also found. So Chris Goforth hooked me up with the Lindy Sports. Yesterday when I was in Publix, I found the Athlon Sports.
Here we go.
So I got some college football preview. This one is gold. This one I am not going to let anybody use because there is a lot of college football fantasy.
Let me see that.
Nope.
Let me see that.
Nope.
Let me just see it.
Looks pretty, doesn't it? Clemson, Alabama, Georgia.
You don't even want somebody else's fingerprints on the magazine, do you?
No, because there's a lot of college football fantasy stuff in there. A lot of good stuff that you could look at in the magazine. You guys can tune in. Watch929thegame.com. We're streaming live. You can see our ugly faces or good-looking faces. I got to put – where's my mic muff? There it is.
Beauty is in the eye of the beholder.
Yeah, yeah. My wife thinks I'm good-looking, and that's all that matters. That's all that I really care about. Other than that, things are good. I'm a little tired. I had two football games last night. Body just doesn't respond the way that it used to.
And a workout before that, right?
No, I didn't make the workout. I had a lot of things to do. Sophia's birthday, we were kind
you
of consumed
so
with that.
You are so lazy, it's unbelievable.
It's 2 days in a row I've missed Nine Round Fitness. I will be there.
Dude, you got a workout on Sunday with all the running around we were doing, man.
Yeah. Well, I got a workout yesterday. 90 straight minutes of football.
Nice.
I was gassed.
Did y'all win?
No, we did not play well last
What's,
night.
Are you guys trending the wrong way?
Yeah, we're 3-2. Okay. Yeah, we were 3-0. Now we're 3-2, and it's two straight losses that were not good.
Now, I mean, where is it at? Like is the whole thing spiraling out of control, or just a couple of setbacks?
That's a couple of setbacks. Right. Regular season in flag football is just work on things to get ready for the playoffs.
How were your fantasy stats last night?
I had 2 2-point conversions in the first game. I had a few catches in the second game, and a guy mossed me. I got stuck out on an island guarding some like 25-year-old guy that's like 6'2", and they threw a jump ball, and I had a hand on it, and he just two-handed it and took it away from me.
He treated you like Julio did to Malcolm Butler?
Yeah, I didn't have as much on it as Malcolm Butler did. I was able to get – because I was trying to just bat it
away. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Knock it down.
Yeah, I don't have hops.
Just knock it down.
I couldn't jump Mark Owens when I was 140 pounds. You think at 228 or 230 I can jump? No, there's no hops for me. How are you doing this morning?
No, waiting for you to bring me in.
Oh, yeah, I got to.
What's up,
MO?
Got to bring me in.
What's up?
Deadpool 2, go do it. Deadpool 2, go
You've
do
seen it.
It.
Not safe for kids, though.
Oh, God, no. It's a hard R.
Nudity?
If you've seen it, yes.
Not the nudity you're thinking of.
But not the nudity you're thinking of.
What does that mean?
Do
they show alien, superhero alien nudity?
Sure.
Yes, that's a great way to put it. But it's okay. Josh Brolin is good.
A little weird.
Ryan Reynolds just kills it. It's really good. I'm not a big like comic book Marvel Universe guy. Like you talk to Grant. Like, Grant, so talk to me about Avengers Infinity War, and you got to grab a snack because you're going to be there for about an hour and a half. I don't follow it the way you know he does and some people do. I just enjoy Deadpool. He's my favorite comic book character of all of them. I haven't even seen Avengers yet, but it's fantastic. So good. So.
Have you guys seen Game Night yet?
No. You told us about it yesterday.
I'm just saying. You guys have had 24 hours. What's the delay?
You've had 24 months to see Remember the Titans.
Actually, it's longer than that.
It's been a while. Preacher Man, how you doing this morning?
What's up, Preacher Man?
Gonna bring you in. Say hello.
Good morning.
Good?
How's everybody doing today? Yeah, I'm good. How's everybody?
Good.
Game 7, dude. Game 7 in the NHL playoffs.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. They're going a distance, but we'll see what happens. I think
I'm going with Tampa at home.
Yeah, I think so. I think I agree with you. I mean, I'd like to see Washington get over the hump just because Barry Trotz is their coach, formerly of the Predators, but that'd be the only reason.
Set headline, your Preds lost your general manager to the Minnesota Wild. Looks like my hockey team pilfered your hockey team, and they're not even really my hockey team. You frustrated about that?
A little bit. Let's not talk about that.
The sports world never stops. So if you missed anything, Rick and John are here to tell you what's up.
What's up, Holmes?
Well, the problem is teams typically do not adjust contracts in a significant way with 3 years remaining.
That's Joel Corey on with John and Hugh this morning. Really good interview. If you missed it, it's up at 92.9thegame.com. Talking about Julio Jones and saying teams don't typically adjust. And that's what we were talking about yesterday. It might be nice to want to have an update or an adjustment. The Falcons don't have to do anything. I don't envision a point where Julio Jones is going to go, I'm holding out till I get a new deal, because in that scenario, you might see the Falcons dangle him out there and see if you can trade him if he tries to force the hand. I just don't envision that with this group, and Atlanta has no pressure. You're under the salary cap. Guys are already signed. You're not going to go out and make any major moves between now and July. There might be some little ancillary moves if you pop a guy in here, pop a guy there. So they don't have to bow down to any, you know, threats or anything. And again, we haven't heard any threats from Julio's camp. There's a few loose reports, Ian Rappaport being one of them, saying that he could want an update to his contract. I don't think anything happens between now and next year.
I don't either. And look, we talked yesterday. He's 3 years out. Mm-hmm. It's the timing stinks. And you also duplicate that or multiply that by the fact he comes off a down season by his typically high Hall of Fame standards.
Yep.
So next year at this time, we talked about this yesterday, next year at this time, the Falcons are going to sit down with Julio, but they're probably not going to sit down with Julio until after they sit down with Jake Matthews and Grady Jarrett. So Julio is under contract. He is going to have to come at peace with that contract somehow. I do not believe that our Falcons are going to redo his contract this offseason, even though they have said publicly they are open to at least examining and considering doing that. Now, in terms of a holdout, because you've got Aaron Donald out of OTAs, Tom Brady out of OTAs, you've got Le'Veon Bell out of OTAs, Gronk, you've got Earl Thomas of Seattle is not at OTAs. It's not a holdout until a guy starts missing mandatory stuff. Mm-hmm. This is voluntary right now. It'd be better if he were there, but it's not mandatory. The mandatory camp in June, is that right, John? June 12th through 14th, something like that?
Exactly.
If Julio's not there, we got a problem.
Yeah, then all of a sudden you're going to start to look at, is this a scenario where it becomes a holdout? Now, Aaron Donald, in his case, Aaron Donald's openly said, I'm not showing up till I get a new contract. You just paid Ndamukong Suh, who's half the man that Aaron Donald, he might be more than half, two-thirds of the man that Aaron Donald is. You gave him a boatload of money. You made all these moves if you're the Rams. Ndamukong Suh is going to make Aaron Donald get paid. Julio's not in that scenario right now. He's still a top, seven or eight paid by average receiver in the league. Should he be higher? Absolutely. And again, I'm all for these guys getting money. Until I see or hear from his camp saying we're not showing up until I get a new contract, to me, it's not that big of a deal.
There's a lot of Falcons news here as we continue What's Up. Let's hit on these quick. Cam Jordan of the Saints told Good Morning Football that you can get into Matt Ryan's head if you hit him repeatedly. Mm-hmm. And people are running with this like it's a headline. It's not a headline. It's a Saint throwing shade on a Falcon. And he did say that Cam Newton was his favorite in-division quarterback to sack. But, John, can you name one quarterback who likes getting sacked repeatedly in a football game?
No.
One?
That's the idea of every defense against every quarterback that's ever played in the NFL. Hit him and they don't like it. These are guys that are standing back there. And let's be honest, you got 300-pounders running at you full speed trying to bury you into the ground. Nobody likes to get hit like that. That's what the principle of football is about being physical. You knock the snot out of the other guy, typically they don't want to do the same things the same way. And that goes for quarterback, running back, receiver, defensive back, linebacker, you name it, guys don't want to be hit.
And John, before we try to give away $1,000, we have a little bit of perhaps reality show dating drama with Tack McKinley.
Uh-oh.
Have you heard what's up with Tack McKinley?
No.
He was at the Braves game with Brielle Zolciak.
Oh, I did see that, yes.
The daughter of Croy Bierman.
And Kim Zolciak.
And Kim Zolciak. Uh-huh. He He shot his shot on Twitter
I
at Brielle.
Yeah.
She responded, hey, you know, do you want to go to a Braves game? She said, yeah. He said, let's go. She said, yeah. They went to a Braves game together. And one of his hashtags was, shoot yo shot.
As you should. You're a single man in this city, you go for it. If you're a guy that needs $1,000, listen up.
Now it's time to reveal our national signing bonus code word. The code word is...
Giggle, G-I-G-G-L-E. Roddy White used to have a very entertaining giggle.
He did.
You text giggle right now to 72881. Again, giggle right now
that
to 72881. No,
Roddy,
not really.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, that's your code word for the $1,000 national signing bonus contest. Please stop that. Giggle to 72881. Roddy's at home going, I don't find that funny. But if you text giggle right now to 72881.
It's something like that.
It's close.
It's something like that. It's, yeah, anyway, so let's move on.
There it is.
Bingo, Mark Owens, the genius behind the glass here.
That's the Roddy Kamla mashup.
Great job. I did a lot better job imitating him the other day, didn't I? What's not up is the Braves losing last night, John, but I heard a Brian Snicker soundbite, and it was perfect. He just said it's one of them games, man. It is. Pavetta shut us down, and Folty was terrific, right? Gives up one run in six innings. We just could not get... the critical hit. We couldn't string hits together. We got beat at Philly. I'm not tripping about this loss at all. We can still win the series. And, John, doesn't it seem like the Braves kind of boot the first game of a series and then,
like
dig in and win that second game and then usually win the rubber match?
Yeah, Nick Pavetta has been really good for Philly last couple of starts out. He's 4-2. You're not mad at Fulton Evich. He gives you a solid start. You just got to score runs. You go out and get shut out, you're lose baseball games. Half game up. You need to take the matchup today. Brandon McCarthy going to get the start. Let's see if he can string together another good start to capitalize on what he did last week.
Pitcher's duel last night. I think the ball's going to be flying out of that Philly park because McCarthy's been getting, you know, hit off and on. You never really know what you're going to get from him. And Velasquez, the guy that the Phillies are putting on the mound, is a strikeout guy, but he's also a guy that gives up home runs. So I predict a high-scoring game tonight.
Elsewhere, NBA playoffs continue. Home court advantage. Proving out in the Eastern Conference to be the thing. Cleveland rolls last night. They even up the series with the Boston Celtics, two games apiece. You know, I had picked Cleveland in six to begin this series. I just don't know if either one of these teams can win on the opposing team's floor.
I don't either, but for Boston, this is scary now. You've got a 9-0 home record in the playoffs to hang your hat on. That ain't going to beat LeBron James in game five at TD Garden. You're going to have to go out there and slay the beast. This is David against Goliath because we have seen LeBron James before. Game six back in 2012, go in there down 3-2 and hang 45-15-5 on him. So, but John, game two, LeBron had that game. He had a 42-point triple-double, and they lost by 13. So it does look like a home court series.
He had 44 last night, by the way. The King was out there balling. It'll be Rockets and Warriors game number four tonight.
Blowout.
Golden State 16-0 the last 2 years at home in the playoffs.
Blowout.
There's your stat for the day. All right, we're going to put it up on Twitter, and we're going to get your input next. Who's to blame for Julio's lack of red zone production? We're going to start to break it down on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and watch 92.9thegame.com.
The problem is teams don't like setting precedents no matter how good the player. If they do something for him with 3 years left, the team always is concerned about what happens next.
That was Joel Corey, former agent and capologist. He joined John and Hugh this morning. He's with CBS Sports. Fascinating interview and a great get by those guys with Julio's contract in the news, Matt Ryan's contract. Boy, the ink barely dry on that one. So fascinating stuff in terms of what we talked about yesterday. Teams just don't do this. 3 years out from the end of your deal, they don't just say, oh, okay, you're discontented. Let's sit down and rip it up and do a new deal. They just don't do that.
Right.
It's not the way business is done in all 32 teams in the NFL. So Julio can be upset and feel some kind of way about his contract, but I don't believe he's going to get paid or updated until next offseason. Rick and John hanging and banging here in the Kia Studios talking Falcons. And, John, I do want to make this point real quick. I am not hating on Julio at all.
Not a bit.
These are the realities of the economics of the NFL. I said yesterday, I will say it again, Julio is underpaid, okay? Based on being eighth in the NFL in terms of average annual salary, eighth, he's underpaid. He does need more money. But the timing isn't right, and he's going to have to get in line. So I'm not hating at all. I'm not even criticizing. I'm just keeping it real. It is not time, because we heard yesterday, man, you know, it's time to pay the man and all this kind of stuff. That will happen in due time when it is supposed to happen. So as John mentioned, we have a poll up. It's on my personal Twitter account. It's at RickandJohn929 as well. Who's to blame for Julio Jones' lack of red zone production? Is it Julio? Is it Ryan? Is it Sark? Or is it double teams or double coverage or Tampa 2 or whatever you want to say? So let's chop it up, man. 404-741-0929.
Well, and Mark Owens has put up a Vision Computers Twitter poll. Vision Computers, where if you need help with tech support, less than 15 seconds away. It's at RickandJohn929. Emma, what are we looking at?
You'll give us a vote right now. Some votes already coming in. Who's to blame for Julio's lack of red zone production? So who do you want to blame? Matt Ryan, Sark? You blame that Julio always gets double covered, or are you blaming Julio himself? Handful of votes coming in, and 50% say it's Sark's fault. 19% say it's all because he was always double covered.
Okay.
31% are blaming Julio, and no votes for Matty Ice yet.
None?
None.
Really?
Not yet.
Okay.
Danny says he's got to be on the field to get the ball in the red zone or needs to create better separation.
The whole on-the-field thing is... it aggravates me. Julio Jones plays about, what, 75-80% of the snaps? There are going to be times, no matter who the receiver is, he comes off the field. Now, there are times I've seen on third down he'll come off the field, and I don't know if that's a coaching decision, if that's a decision from Julio himself, if it's a package type decision. But I would think every time inside the 20, I don't care if you've ran three straight go routes before that to get down inside the 20, Julio's got to be on the field.
John, can you please, if you haven't already, pull up the red zone numbers that you pulled up yesterday?
Oh, I've done better. I'm all the way back to the 2012 season.
So let me take the people to the conclusion, and then I want you to connect the dots. By process of elimination, we're talking about who's to blame for Julio's lack of red zone production. Mm-hmm. I think you can take Steve Sarkisian out of the running. Mm-hmm. And he's winning our poll, at our Vision Computer Twitter poll, at RickandJohn929. He is also running away with the poll on my personal account. Mm-hmm. Who's to blame? Julio, Ryan, Sark, or double teams? Sark, number one, 49%. Julio, number two, at 26%. Double teams, number three, at 17%. And Matt Ryan escaping blame almost entirely at 8%. When John gives you these numbers, especially from last year, the volume of red zone targets for Julio Jones was in line with all the other studs at wide receiver. So you can take Sark out of it. Now, if all the other studs were 30 red zone targets and Julio had 10 red zone targets, then you talk about Sark. But, John, when you give the people these numbers, I think Sark is off the hook.
Now, this is just regular season, and I'm not sure if the stat that D-Led had was including the playoffs or not. But I went back through regular season. You can find all this at profootballreference.com. I've done the last five full years of healthy season. So I took out 2013 when Julio only played four games. Last year, regular season, 19 targets, five catches, which is right in line with pretty much everybody else there. D-Led had six for 22, so I don't know if that was adding the playoffs
as well.
That had
to. That
had to. May have, because remember, he has three red zone targets against Philadelphia alone.
Correct. That had to.
One touchdown. Antonio Brown, on this, according to Pro Football Reference, had 20 targets last year in the red zone.
Okay, give him that one more. Julio and AB compared.
Julio had 19 targets.
Mm-hmm.
Antonio Brown had 20.
Okay, so right there. You don't even need any more stats, right? Sark's
the
hook.
Here's where he is off the hook.
Right.
But I want to get deeper into the stats. Antonio Brown catches 11 balls in the red zone. Julio, 5. Antonio Brown has 6 touchdowns in the red zone. Julio won.
Mm.
So I do agree that that takes Steve Sarkisian off the hook when it comes to, at least last year, was Julio targeted enough? Because, again, he's right in line with everybody else as far as the top wide receiver. Antonio Brown had the best year of any receiver a season ago, considered number one, Julio number two. And you sit right there. You want to go DeAndre Hopkins. All right, another great wide receiver. He had 19 targets in the red zone.
Mm.
9 receptions, 7 of them for touchdown. 7. 7 of his 9 catches in the red zone were for touchdown. That's DeAndre Hopkins, a guy that you could argue belongs with Antonio Brown and Julio Jones. So I wanted to go back over the last 5 healthy years of Julio Jones. 2016, Falcons had the 7th greatest offense in the history of the NFL. You know how many red zone targets Julio had?
I'm going to say less than last year.
He had 10.
Oh, my God.
5 catches, 2 touchdowns. Now, mind you, Matt Ryan throws the ball to 13 different receivers. They spread it perfectly. Tevin Coleman had more red zone targets that year than Julio Jones. A part-time 35% of the snap running back had more red zone targets because Kyle Shanahan schemed to set it up a bunch of different ways. 2015, year one of Kyle Shanahan, year one of Dan Quinn. 22 targets for Julio Jones. Again, right in line with all the top guys. That year, he had 13 receptions in the red zone and 5 touchdowns. Go back to 2014.
And by the way, those are the numbers that should be every year.
2014, and this was a bad year. Team was just awful. 12 red zone targets, 7 catches, 2 touchdowns. And then when you go all the way back to 2012, and again, this is Dirk Cutter being the offensive coordinator. Team goes to the NFC Championship game again. I excluded 2013 because Julio only played 4 games. 20 red zone targets, 11 catches, 7 touchdowns. So, Rick, here's what this tells me about the red zone. You should be targeting a top receiver about 20 times a year in the red zone. That's only a little over 1 target a game in the red zone. The problem is you need to get back to this number. You need, and I'm circling it, you got to get back to 2012 where it's 11 catches and 7 touchdowns in the red zone.
So let me, and we'll take a call or two here, and we'll reiterate this opinion throughout the show. We're going to talk a lot about this today. If I had a choice here, it would be the exact opposite of what the people are voting on my personal Twitter account. Mm-hmm. I think Matt Ryan is the most to blame. And let me fix this a little bit. I think there is virtually no blame on Sarkisian based on the numbers that we have just worked out. Mm-hmm. There is blame that goes to double teams and just the fact of life in the NFL. There is blame on Julio Jones, a bad route here, a drop pass there. But I think there's more blame on Matt Ryan, and here's why. Matt Ryan, as we talked about yesterday, willingly lobbed the jump ball to Tony Gonzalez at the goalpost. I don't think Matt Ryan is comfortable with a jump ball to the left or right side. Mm-hmm. I don't think Matt Ryan, matter of fact, I know he's not comfortable naturally making a back shoulder throw, which is a big reason why DeAndre Hopkins has such awesome red zone numbers, is because whatever the quarterback is, they know to back shoulder him or just throw it up where his hops and his hand catching ability can go get it. So, John, I think Matt Ryan, I think there's blame to go around, but I put most of the blame on Matt Ryan. I think Matt Ryan is too cautious in the red zone throwing to Julio.
And then you go back to this, and I wonder, is it lack of practice? Is it lack of reps? You know, Julio's missed time, and he's a warrior. He gets out there on game day, and quite frankly, that's all that matters to me because he'll go give me 7 for 140 and a score. Is it lack of repetition? I know for a fact Tony Gonzalez used to sit after practice for at least an hour working on that back of the end zone. They'd either use the jugs machine or Matt would be throwing it to him, get it high, let me go get it, toe tap, and get down. I know Julio works as well, and I'm not knocking it, but I don't see the cohesion, and it's never been there, and I don't understand why.
And just quick, before we take a call, would you not agree with me that the jump ball to the center of the field is way easier and way more comfortable than the jump ball to the right or left side?
It shouldn't be, because the right or left side, you can dictate man coverage. You can get the outside release where Julio can either go back pylon and you lob it back there, or he puts the foot in the ground and you throw it to the front pylon like you see Aaron Rodgers and even Tony Romo and guys used to throw all the time. That should be a staple throw, and it's not.
And on first down, when we were going for the touchdown deep in Philly territory, that was the play they ran, and they screwed it up because they weren't on the same page.
They weren't. Let's go to Kiev first up on Sports Radio 92.9. The game. What's going on, Kiev? How are you doing?
I'm doing fine, yourself. How are you, man?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing good. I just got a quick question for you guys. Who is the best wide receiver in the NFL?
Antonio Brown this year.
I understand that, but I don't see it. He's got a different quarterback in Ben Roethlisberger, number one. Julio, I'm from Chicago. I'm a Chicago Bears fan, and I watch Atlanta all the time. I just don't see the discrepancy and the argument that Julio is not the best wide receiver in the league, hands down. He makes Matt Ryan look pretty good. He goes and gets the ball. Now, and you guys were talking about Tony Gonzalez and the situation with how many times Matt Ryan's thrown the ball to him. It's a different situation in the middle of the field, yes, because Tony Gonzalez wasn't double covered by the best cornerback or linebacker in the league every time he steps on the field.
But he was double-teamed. Kiev, thank you so much for the phone call.
He was double-teamed a lot.
Tony, like, basically was double-teamed the last 15 years of his career. Look, Kiev, to your point, it is somewhat debatable. Julio versus Antonio Brown for best wide receiver in football.
Absolutely.
My choice is Antonio Brown. I just think he's more consistent.
Hey, got to give a couple of shout-outs. First of all, Keith the Plumber, big listener to the show, 27 years old today. Happy birthday to him. We also had a winner in the National Signing Bonus Contest. James in Duluth picked up a dub and $1,000 here from the Midday Show with Rick and John. We read between the lines next with the red and black clad Mark Owens.
You know, we're actually going to hear from a sports agent who details and breaks down some of Julio's contract. Plus, gentlemen, it's the end of an era. We need to pour one out for our homie. Literally. We'll explain next. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Sports Radio.
Hitting it again from the Kia Studios, Rick Kamla and John Michaels. You have arrived to the Midday Party with Rick and John. And at 10:40 every day, we read between the lines. Mark Owens finds sound, usually local, a little bit of national, and then we opine. M.O., hit it, man.
So let's start with the local. Braves falling to the Phillies in game one of the three-game set last night. Final score of 3-0. Here's Nick Markakis talking about Nick Pivetta, who is... He was just done, and you got to respect that.
You know, just pounding the zone. He's got that curveball working. You know, he's got a good life on his fastball. He didn't leave too many pitches over the plate to do damage on. So, you know, it's one of those days you got to tip your hat and move on.
So now it's a battle for first place between the Braves and the Phillies. Braves still have a half a game lead over Philadelphia. Mike Fulte says it's a huge rivalry.
This is going to be a good one for a long time, especially how young we are, and we got a good mix of veterans in there, too, to help the guys out. And you see a lot of similarities, and it's going to be fun.
And one more from Coach Brian Snicker talking about Fulte.
It happens. You know, it happens. And I say sometimes the other guy can pitch really well, too, and just one of them games, man.
And that's exactly what it is. You have to tip your cap every now and then. These guys are out there making money in major leagues, and there's guys that are just going to win games. Pivetta has had a couple of really good starts in a row. He was on the yo-yo on our fantasy league, and now Grant McCauley picked him up and has held on to him. I had him and dropped him and picked him
you
up.
You ran him against me last week, didn't you?
Yeah, boy, you got off.
I did. I didn't want to bring it up. I got a win against John last week.
No,
I will
not
take
only
it.
A win. You kicked my rear end.
It was fortunate. John's team had a bad week.
And then yesterday,
I'll take it, though.
Wendy's team felt the wrath. I had 6 home runs yesterday alone. Last week against Rick for the entire week, I had 8 home runs. So, yeah, that'll just let you know that the team was wrecking shop last night.
That is baseball, in a nutshell,
right
there.
You know what it was, Rick? I gave him a pep talk. I sat down, a little more demonstrative than Brian Snitker normally is with the Braves. And I said, look, guys, this is unacceptable. We're on a championship course. You're either going to hit the ball or I'm cutting you.
Our league has been sleeping, our fantasy baseball league, and we'll get it back to Mark Owens, has been sleeping on Nick Pivetta. 4-2, 3.23 ERA, and he's got 60 strikeouts in 53 innings. He's been fantastic.
So we know about the Charles Barkley, Draymond Green, a little bit of drama over the past couple of months.
Yep. Yeah, I'm just telling you, I want to punch him in the face. I do.
You can hear that. He said, I want to punch him in the face.
I'm just telling you, I want to punch him in the face.
So inside the NBA, they were on the road for Game 3 of the Western Conference Finals between the Warriors and the Rockets. Charles Barkley had the opportunity to ask Kevin Durant about that annoying Draymond Green. And then they also ended up talking a little bit about his mom's Twitter.
Is Draymond Green as annoying in person as he is on television?
Annoying to who?
You should go talk to him downstairs.
Yeah.
Is he annoying? I mean, you're around him every day. He's
that's
annoying
he
on television.
What annoys you about a Draymond?
He gonna apologize to him.
Downstairs, you can go ask him.
Yeah, go ask him, man.
You think a 41-point win tonight will keep Draymond's mom from tweeting and calling you out?
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure it will. W's at all that matters around here, so I'm sure she'll be all right.
You gotta love it. Shaq just busting in going, he's gonna apologize to him. That's what he's gonna do. And Charles wouldn't take the bait with that. He just kept going on. Here's what TNT needs to do tonight. Warriors win, Draymond's gotta be on the set. Period.
I agree with the ask. I don't know if Warriors PR even wants to dicey at this point.
No,
I agree with
I
you. It'd be,
so.
It'd be great TV.
I don't think Draymond's going to walk up there fist ready to fly. I think him and Barkley will bust stones. They'll shake hands afterwards and let it roll.
But you can hear in Kevin Durant's voice right there that they are talking in the locker room about Charles Barkley, and it's not good. The players are over it. Charles sits up there on his pulpit and takes shots, and the players are over it. I'm telling you, that's what I heard from Kevin Durant right there. He's like, very simply, He's in the locker room downstairs. Go talk to him. Like in other words, we're there, Charles. We're there with you.
Mm-hmm.
It's a debate we're going to continue to have throughout the show today. Well, this morning on the morning show, former NFL agent. Now, how would you describe Joel Corey? He's an expert on the cap.
Ex-agent. Yeah. He's a cap analyst right now for CBS Sports.
Pretty good numbers interview, and you can hear it at 929thegame.com. Well, here he is breaking down the X's and the O's of Julio's contract.
Well, the problem is teams typically do not adjust contracts in a significant way with 3 years remaining. Jones really isn't dramatically underpaid. The market hasn't changed. He's still eighth overall. Average yearly salary, his guarantees, $47 million third among receivers, his $35.5 million fully guaranteed third. The cash flow in the deal, the percentages of new money after each year are comparable to what Matt Ryan just signed, so it's not like he signed a deal which is extremely backloaded. The problem is teams don't like setting precedents no matter how good the player. If they do something for him with 3 years left, the team always is concerned about what happens next. Does Alex Mack come back next year with 3 years left and go, hey, center market's changed, do something for me? Ryan Schrader, the deal that he signed was bad when he did it. The right tackle market has jumped dramatically. Does he do the same when he has 3 years left next year?
It's all great questions, and that's why he knows more about the cap than we do. I like the breakdown that he gave. Eighth overall in salary and then third and third. So when you hear eighth in average salary, you go, okay, he's underpaid. But that's not always the truth, because typically you'll see five for $100 million. You go, okay, he makes $20 million a year. Well, that's not necessarily true. The money fluctuates year to year based on guarantees and bonuses and all of this other stuff. But the part that struck me more than anything, Rick, was teams don't normally go the three-year tear up the deal. This isn't the NBA. This isn't Major League Baseball. The NFL, it's normally get in line and wait till you have a year left on your deal, then we're going to go back and redo it.
And to John's point, the eighth overall annual salary, that's at 10.5. That does not include the 2.4 that gets him to 12.9, which that 2.4 we believe he has already gotten. So good stuff there from Joel Corey. Emo, what else you got?
We'll hear more from Joel Corey in about 10 minutes from right now. Finally, it's the end of an era. Dr. Pepper has announced.
No!
Dr. Pepper here!
Larry Culpepper is no more. Since 2014, the spokesman for Dr. Pepper, and he acclaimed the self-proclaimed inventor of the college football playoffs.
I thought that was John Fricke.
They are getting rid of the marketing scheme, and they are moving on from the Larry Culpepper character. The guy's real name is James Conner. He's a character actor. You've probably seen
very
him
funny.
In a million things. Brooklyn Nine-Nine, Parks and Rec, Community. He's one of those guys you see him and you go, I know that guy.
But you don't know his name, right?
But you don't. No, you do. His name is Larry Culpepper.
Yeah.
It was a brilliant move. I loved it. I thought Larry Culpepper was a great marketing piece.
Unbelievable marketing piece.
I told the guy, my favorite line was last year in the Steve Smith commercial where he's sleeping on Steve Smith and Smitty runs around and gives everybody a drink. And he goes like, why does everybody call me old? And Larry Culpepper goes, because it says senior on the back of your jersey. Right. It's a great line.
And the SEC Championships, Dr. Pepper, one of the big presenting sponsors, there was an entire section dedicated to Larry Culpepper with the Tailgate 2000
That's
RV
awesome.
Was set up there. You had lawn chairs sitting out. You could take a picture with him. So in honor of Larry Culpepper moving on, I have a little tribute for you.
All aboard the Tailgate 2000. Tuba Steve looking shiny. Next stop, college football playoff.
I will remember you.
It's like I'm the college football Noah. This is my ark.
Will you remember me?
Breathe it in, man. Pure SEC country air.
Don't let your life pass you by.
Donna Sellin on the field, mono and mono. Mono, that means,
Gonna miss you, Larry Culpepper. You made me want to drink Dr. Pepper.
R.I.P. Larry Culpepper. It's gonna be our slice of life later in the show.
It will. I've got a diet Dr. Pepper out there right now. Preacher Man is what, about 17 ounces into yours? You're about halfway done? Still got 3 hours to go. You better pace yourself there, Preacher Man. Take a break. We'll come back. We're gonna get back into this Julio lack of red zone production. I've got some Matt Ryan numbers that might get him off the hook. Who's to blame? That's next. Sports Radio 92.9, The Game.
weekday morning. The
game. Who's to blame, y'all? We're playing the blame game with Julio Jones because the red zone numbers are putrid and they need to be better. This is a future Hall of Fame guy. You got Nuke Hopkins getting busy in the red zone, Antonio Brown getting busy in the red zone. You got all these guys getting busy in the red zone except our freak in Julio Jones. So let's play the blame game. Is it Ryan? Is it Julio? Is it Sark? Or is it double teams? Call us, 404-741-0929. I said in the 1020 segment, you can take Sark off the list. In terms, well, I want him on the list, but I wouldn't be voting for Sark because, and maybe John's got another way to look at this, because the red zone targets that Julio Jones got at least last year were in line with the red zone targets that the other big receivers got. And I kind of put it on Matt Ryan in terms of I think that he is too delicate and too cautious in throwing outside balls and jump balls and back shoulder balls to Julio, whether it's on the left side or the right side. But John's got some Matt Ryan stats that are going to make you smarter.
So I went back to the red zone numbers for Matt Ryan. Simply go to Pro Football Reference. You can go to the splits, you go year by year, and you can look up whatever you want to look up. They give you some great stuff. So last year was actually Matt Ryan's worst year in the red zone, period. And I just went back to 2012, and I excluded 2013 because Julio, again, was hurt that year. Last year, Matt Ryan in the red zone only completed 45.7% of his passes. Now, there were drops and some other stuff there. He had 15 touchdowns, 2 interceptions, and one of the interceptions, I know for a fact, hit off Mohamed Sanu's chest when they played against Detroit and got picked off. So that was a year ago. In his MVP year, 65.9% of his passes completed in the red zone, 23 touchdowns, 1 interception. So I know there's going to be people go, oh, that's the anomaly. He's never had anything close to that. Not so fast, my friend. 3 years ago, first year with Kyle Shanahan, 57.5% completion in the red zone, 17 touchdowns, 4 interceptions. Not great, but not bad either. 2014, a year in which the team was not very good. 63% completions, 19 touchdowns, Rick. 0 interceptions in the red zone for Matt Ryan. And then go back to 2012, the year they go to the NFC Championship game. 63% completion, 25 touchdowns in the red zone, 2 interceptions. So Matt Ryan, when you look at this, a season ago, not good in the red zone. 45.5% completion is not a good number. I don't care which way you slice it. But 15-2 touchdown to interception ratio, pretty damn good. Biggest interception in the entire, all the years that we went back through is 4 in the red zone. But typically it's 1, 2, or 0. That lets you know that Matt Ryan is efficient when you get down in the red zone. And when I look at the numbers from a year ago, that points the needle a little bit back towards Steve Sarkisian. What was he not doing to get guys open that every other offensive coordinator was doing?
And that's why this is a great debate. Get involved, Rise Up Nation. We want to hear from you. The word you used is efficient. Mm-hmm. And that's right. Matt Ryan has 9 red zone interceptions in the last 5 years.
Mm-hmm. Come
on. That's amazing. That's absolutely Hall of Fame level. However, let's play the semantics game. You could say, oh my God, is he efficient? Or you could say, he's too careful. Or you could say, he is not, he is so, I don't want to use the word afraid. He wants to avoid a huge game-changing red zone interception mm-hmm. or turnover so badly that I believe that he will not put Julio Jones up to bat on some risky plays. Like, as Dave Archer always talks about us, how they bracket Julio. And you've got a guy on the inside, you've got a guy playing him towards the outside. But again, you're talking about defensive backs that are 5'10", 5'11", 6'1", 6'1". If you're a 6'1 defensive back, they look at you as huge. Mm-hmm. Like Isaiah Oliver, our new guy, 6'2", 201. And people are saying he's a big cornerback. That doesn't sound that big to me. I'm taller than him. So I think this is these stats tell me, John, when I'm reading these stats, 2 picks, 1 pick, 4 picks, 0 picks, 2 picks, is that Matt Ryan's being too careful in the red zone.
Yeah, but isn't that what you want? I mean, we will complain to 1,000 degrees when Matt Ryan throws careless interceptions. When I'm in the red zone, I want points.
But here, great point. But here's the thing. I will never complain. I'll complain about a slant pass to Mohamed Sanu, who's covered high and low, because that's a bad decision. I would not complain about a three-step drop lollipop to the back pylon on the left side of the football field to Julio Jones. If that ball is tipped, intercepted, if Julio gets an offensive PI and it backs us up and we got to kick a field goal, I will never complain about the midday throw that we've been talking about since we came on the air together, John, here on the home of the Falcons. So, Matt, I don't believe puts Julio Jones up to bat enough in high-risk, high-reward scenarios.
So 3 of the 5 years, Matt Ryan's rating in the red zone is 102 or higher. He had a 102 in 2012, 109.4 in 2014, 108.8 in his MVP year. The 2 years that it was down, the first year under Kyle Shanahan, 83.6. Last year under Steve Sarkisian, 81.
So, but again, my read on that is those are awesome individual stats for Ryan, and they have contributed to wins. But when your quarterback is getting busy, but your superstar wide receiver is not, there's a disconnect and there's an issue there. It reminds me of back in the day when Kobe would leave the Lakers behind and just feel like, I got to score 50 tonight.
Right.
Well, you can't do it yourself. And it's a bit of an odd analogy because Ryan has 10 other guys that he's playing with. But what I'm saying is I feel like a lot of times Ryan's like, I'm going to get it done with a safer pass to this guy. I'm going to get the job done with a safer pass to this guy as opposed to throwing risky, in a risky way, the jump ball to Julio Jones. John, to your point, I don't want red zone turnovers from our team at all. Mm-hmm. But if you are trying to put Julio to bat on a jump ball and it gets intercepted, I will never complain about that.
There's people that will, though, because it's a turnover in the red zone and you're taking points off the board. To the point of that there may be some type of disconnect between the two of them, when Matt has the MVP year, he has 23 touchdowns in the red zone. Two of them go to Julio Jones. Julio only had 10 targets in the red zone that year. Yet Matt Ryan was one of the great red zone efficiency quarterbacks of all time, 23-1 touchdown to interception ratio. I didn't think that year he was cautious at all. I thought that year he was making the right decisions, getting the guys out in space, taking advantage of matchups. I think last year they didn't take advantage of matchups. You saw the targets down for Tevin Coleman, not by much, but a few. You saw the targets way down from Devontae Freeman. You saw the targets down potentially for Julio Jones, even though he had more that year than he did the year previous. Were they quality targets? You know, were they balls where Matt gave him an opportunity to go make a play on it? There is a disconnect for whatever reason between those two. That's the job now of Steve Sarkisian to get that fixed. That's the job from Julio Jones and Matt Ryan to get that fixed, because if this team is better in the red zone, you're not the 6 seed, you're the 2 seed. That's the difference from a year ago. You know, 2 years ago, you were much more efficient in the red zone. You were a team that comes with the 2 seed. You end up getting all your playoff games at home, and you go to the Super Bowl.
To me, it's about confidence, man. Be confident. Know that you're Ryan, a future Hall of Fame guy, throwing to Julio Jones, a future Hall of Fame guy, and throw it up there. Like, no quarterback who's ever played with Larry Fitzgerald gulped and was reluctant about throwing the jump ball to him. No, Matt Ryan wasn't reluctant about throwing the jump ball to Tony Gonzalez. Mm-hmm. I just think he's too safe right now. Maybe he hears the noise from the streets about, there's another Ryan interception. There's another Ryan turnover. And maybe he doesn't want to hear that. And maybe he just wants to err on the side of taking a field goal as opposed to making that risky pass and making that turnover and having this whole entire town take a you-know-what on him.
I don't know if he's hearing us. I don't think Matt quite operates that way. Maybe he is. He's had 3 picks in the red zone in 2 years. One of them we clearly documented. Mohamed Sanu, the ball hit him right in the chest and doinked up in the air and got picked off. I would rather them be a little bit cautious and get points than get down there and get nothing.
I totally hear what you're saying. But when you say that, John, and I'm not getting into you, but when you say that, then you can't follow it up with a Julio complaint. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but I'm not complaining about it.
No, I'm just saying, like, I'm talking to the other people kind of through you. If you want Matt Ryan to be super safe and super cautious and super efficient at the risk or at the jeopardy of Julio getting busy in the red zone, that's fine. You can be that guy. I want Matt Ryan to be more of a gambler and be more of a dice roller in the red zone to Julio Jones.
What I want is those two to be on the same page.
But Ryan's got it. He's got to take those chances, because when is Julio wide open in the red zone?
He never.
Never.
No receiver's wide open in the red zone.
Ryan doesn't want to throw into coverage, okay, because he's smart and he's efficient. I'm just saying, I want him to get out of his red zone shell a little bit and throw into double coverage to Julio Jones. Not into anybody else. Mm-hmm. I don't want him thrown into doubles against to Ridley or Sanu or Hooper or any of these guys. But Julio Jones, to me, needs some double-team throws in the red zone.
Hey, And you do. And he had a couple in the Philly game, and it didn't get done. Bad throw, back corner. That was Matt Ryan. Didn't put him up to bat enough. Throws the slant in a red zone attempt. It's caught, but not enough for the touchdown. And then the last play we've documented literally for 4 months now. Matt did everything he could to get the ball out because Julio gets pushed to the ground slash slips coming out of his break. There needs to be more timing, much like Tony Gonzalez when there was timing. I don't think it's a matter of being safe or unsafe. I think it's just those two are not on the same accord. And judging, they haven't been on the same thing really since 2012 when Julio had 7 touchdowns in the red zone. He had 5 in 2014, which if he gets 5 in the red zone, I'd be ecstatic this year.
5 in the red zone equals about 10 on the year. John, before we try to give away $1,000, let's get Daniel in here. Daniel, we're playing the blame game. I've got a poll up on my personal account. We have a Vision Computer Twitter poll as well. Who's to blame for the lack of red zone production? Julio himself, his quarterback, his OC, or the defense?
I'm going to have to go with the coaching staff and the front office staff. And honestly, guys, I love the fact that y'all brought these stats and these numbers into this, because what it's telling me is that there's 3 factors that's missing from those red zone efficiencies, and that's Harry Douglas, Roddy White, and Tony Gonzalez. And I'm just being honest with it, because it seemed like when we had those guys, it was dumping the ball off to them, they was getting in the end zone. Now that Julio Jones don't have those guys around him, I don't know if the confidence is there for Matt Ryan to throw that ball to somebody who can get in the end zone and get those points scored. And that's just my take on it.
We appreciate it, Daniel. I mean,
thanks,
Daniel. It was true last year. It wasn't true 2 years ago, and Roddy didn't play and Tony wasn't there, and neither was Harry Douglas. So you've had 1 year, new offensive coordinator, didn't work great. You had 2 years ago with Kyle Shanahan. It did work great. But the year previous, in year one under Kyle Shanahan, it was pretty pedestrian as well. Let's try to give away $1,000 right here on 92.9.
Now it's time to reveal our national signing bonus code word. The code word is
jury. There's nothing you would rather do less than be on jury duty. Text jury right now, J-U-R-Y, to 72881.
The jury is out on who's to blame for Julio's lack of red zone production.
We'll check back with the Vision Computers Twitter poll in a moment, but you text jury right now to 72881. It's your chance to win $1,000 in our national signing bonus contest. We already had James and Duluth pick up $1,000. Who couldn't use $1,000 summertime dollars? Maybe take that vacation that everybody needs.
So this morning on John and Hugh, the morning show with John and Hugh, they had Joel Corey on, former NFL agent and salary cap expert. He's now with CBS Sports. John, I want you to hear, this is sort of an extended play soundbite right here. Hugh asked him, and I love this question, Hugh asked Joel, why would the Falcons even put it out there publicly that they are entertaining sweetening the contract for Julio Jones?
Well, how do we know if they actually said that and that's just not the agent putting it out there to try to put pressure on the team? I don't know either way. But if you're going to do anything for Julio Jones, there are 2 recent precedents where you don't really fundamentally change the contract, which could appease him. You look at what Pittsburgh did with Antonio Brown in 2015 and 2016 when he had 3 and 2 years left. They took $2 million out of his 2016 salary, gave it to him in 2015, converted that and other money to signing bonus, so the cap number went down. 2016, they borrowed money from 17 and gave him $4 million more, same type of maneuver, so he got $6 million more than he wasn't when he was supposed to make earlier, and then they redid the deal with 1 year left. Last year, Rob Gronkowski had 3 years left on his contract. New England added $5.5 million of not likely to be earned incentives, which he earned. So you could potentially do one of those 2 things or some combination and hope that's something that would appease Jones.
All interesting stuff. And again, this is why guys know a hell of a lot more about the cap than we do. So could they do something like this? Absolutely. Would it make Julio Jones happy? Probably. Will it happen? I'm going to wait and see with this because it has not been the Falcons' MO to do this in the past.
Correct, sir. And to Joel Corey's point right there, that is some incredibly creative math for Antonio Brown and Gronk. And Julio certainly is in the superstar realm with those guys to the point where a franchise would want to make him happy. I just don't see the Falcons doing all that, taking money from future years and bringing it into this year for Julio Jones. I just don't see it swinging like that.
Take another call, 404-741-0929. James is out in Kennesaw. James, what's up? How are you doing?
All right. Just just one thing with the Matt Ryan discussion. Yes, I think Matt Ryan's worth all the money that he's getting and everything. But the difference to me is that Julio is not really treated like the superstar that he is when they get in those situations, because I look at all the top wide receivers that's played the game. You knew where the ball was going at that time, and a perfect example is that Aaron Rodgers, I can't remember the game, but it was on the Monday Night Football. He threw the ball high and out on the up to the wide receiver, but the wide receiver said, I need a second chance because you threw it in the wrong place. And he just basically looked at him and says, okay, I'll get it there the next time. He threw the same exact route, everything else, but he made the play. And the one thing with Julio is I know he's getting double and triple and everything else, is that if he's the true superstar, which he is that Matt Ryan's got to force it sometimes so he can actually make the play, because there's a reason why they're doubling him and tripling him all over the field, is that they don't want him to make the play. So that means that your receivers on the other side are not doing what they need to. So if Julio's doing his job, give him an opportunity to do his job.
Appreciate the call. And we've yelled for more targets down in the red zone. But again, when we go back and break down the numbers, it's very commensurate with what everybody else is doing. It's not like Antonio Brown had 30 red zone targets and Julio had 7.
It's hard for me to believe that Julio and Antonio Brown are hovering around 20 red zone targets for the entire year. That's like 1.2 red zone targets per game.
Yep.
I would have said, now if you would have said, okay, Julio had 22 red zone targets last year, I would have said Brown had 45. Like 3 a game.
The leader,
but it's just not the way it goes.
The leader was Jimmy Graham with 26.
26.
26.
He led the NFL in red zone targets.
26.
So that is why, and look, I am not trying to defend Steve Sarkisian. I didn't wake up today and say, I'm taking up the case for Steve Sarkisian because he's my guy or whatever. I don't think that way. I don't have anything against Ryan, Julio, or Sarkisian. We're just breaking it down. Who's to blame? And the stat that John just gave, Jimmy Graham, number one with 26 red zone targets. Julio, probably in the top 10 with 22 red zone targets. How is that Sark's fault?
No, it's not. Again, it goes back to me, the quarterback and the wide receiver have to figure something out. If there's anything to be figured out, or we got to go back to 2016 where everybody's getting targeted in the red zone, and I'm fine with that. You give me 23-1 TD to interception ratio in 2018, guess what? The Falcons are going to be back in the playoffs, probably have a couple of home games, and a chance to go back to the Super Bowl. Let's talk some Braves. We're going to break that down next. Tough luck loser was Mike Foltynewicz. We'll talk about what needs to be done today to beat the Phillies on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, and watch 92.9thegame.com.
Gore's hard to win, so kid pitched a really good ball game against us. I mean, he kept us off balance. I think just kind of a real good ball game by Havana.
Brian Snicker, boy, did he just imitate the Hotels.com guy, right? Mr. Obvious or Captain Obvious, whatever they call it, with, well, if you don't score runs, it's hard to win. But I'm cool with Snicker, man, because our team is winning. We're Rick and John here in the Kia Studios. It's our Braves breakdown, and he's right. Look, you play 162 games, John, probably out of those 10 out of the 162, you're just going to run into a buzzsaw. The thing is, you expect it to be Strasburg or Scherzer or Kershaw or one of these guys. You don't expect it to be Nick Pavetta. But us fantasy baseball players know that Nick Pavetta has been really good this year.
Daddy has been. I want to go back to the quote. If you don't score, you can't win. See, Ricky Bobby's dad. If you ain't first, you're last, Ricky. Go fast. Well, thank you, coach.
Dude, his dad made him run from the cops with like a tiger in the car. And didn't he have like cocaine in the car or something like that?
Allegedly, he had Colombian Bam Bam, but it was actually just cereal.
Right.
And it was a cougar. It was a
cougar. A cougar.
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
He also made him try to race the car down the street blindfolded, to which he crashed through somebody's house.
Don't try this at home, kids.
That is one of the great movies of all time.
No question about it. We finally agree on a movie.
Yeah, when he was mock on fire running around on the track, I'm on fire. That's one of Will Ferrell's best roles.
The dinner table scenes with the KFC and the Doritos and the Domino's and the little baby Jesus and all that. Oh my God, is that stuff funny?
I like to envision little baby Jesus wearing a Braves uniform, dressed up as Ozzie Albies.
It's so good, man. So we got mowed down by Pivetta last night. Big deal. Third shutout of the year, which is a pretty good number, John. We're 46 games in. We've only been blanked three times. And it so, like, you just tip your cap, dude. Mm-hmm. Like we talked about Sunday at the United match with the first header by Bradley Wright Phillips. What are you going to do? That was an amazing goal, right? You just tip your cap, man. You can't do anything about it.
So I heard the morning guys talking about this. I wanted to bring it up. Yeah, Jose Bautista gone, might be signing with somebody else. I read something.
Mets have interest in him.
Have fun with that. They might as well bring up Tebow while they're at it. But Johan
they
Camargo,
love our former players, do they not?
They do. Johan Camargo, a 24-year-old third baseman right now. I want to ask you guys this. How long do you want to stick with Johan Camargo? Now, Alex Anthopoulos has said he's going to get an extended look at third base. Obviously, there's the Austin Riley aspect playing out at AAA Gwinnett. Don't know how quickly they would run him up there. I know people have asked us about Mike Moustakas. They've asked us about Manny Machado. It's not happening. The Braves are not trading for one of those guys with all this young talent sitting there. Alex Anthopoulos has said as much. Next year's offseason is where the Braves potentially could spend some money. But how long do you want to stick right now with Johan Camargo, who is hitting 209?
Three.
It's not like he's raking.
3 to 4 weeks. Look, I'm going to give you a month because we're rolling. You know, we can have a guy hitting 200 out of the 7-hole or the 8-hole and still rack up a ton of runs, right? I mean, that's not going to kill us.
Right.
You can't have that all year, though. So Anthopoulos, and we heard the sound yesterday, said, it was from over the weekend, we're going to give Camargo a crack at being the everyday guy against righties and against lefties. So here you go. Mm-hmm. This is the audition of a lifetime for Johan Camargo. And he is, I like him as a baseball player, John. The results aren't there from him, but you know he's a humble, hard worker who's talented. He's not a power hitter, but he's a legit hitter. He's a contact hitter and a good one when he's on his game. I give him 3 to 4 weeks. If he's still hitting around 200, I'm probably going to the minors for Austin Riley.
I would give him a little longer than that only because he showed a year ago in 240-plus at-bats he could hit close to 300. Think about Dansby Swanson when he got his first full extended time. He struggled. Then all of a sudden he's come back this year, and he looks like the guy that you traded for. I'm giving Camargo, as long as you're hovering around first place, and he's not hurting the team, I'll give him to July. I might even give him to August, depending on how things are going.
So, and in terms of Camargo in this lineup, maybe, John, having the blessing of your boss will – because Camargo and Flaherty and all of them have been kind of mind-boinked so far. Yeah. Like, Flaherty was leading the league in hitting early in the year. You got Camargo. You still go out and get Jose Bautista. He's gone. Flaherty has cooled and now is in the – utility role that he should be in, and you've got Camargo getting this shot. So maybe the mind games of, okay, I'm the dude. I don't have to look over my shoulder anymore, at least for, you know, the foreseeable future. Maybe that gives him confidence to get it rolling.
You'd like to hope so, because what's good is the rest of the lineup's cooking enough where even if your third baseman's struggling, maybe not to the tune of what Jose Bautista was struggling, but struggling, you can get over that hump. The good thing is Ender's kind of picked it up. I know Acuna has cooled. Dansby's back in the lineup. Freddie's still doing his thing, and Markakis as well.
No doubt about it, dude. So I want to read something to you. Yeah, so dude, you said July. I'm saying 3 or 4 weeks, which is essentially like late June. We're not that far off with how long we would give Camargo to hold down this job. How about this praise from Jose Altuve? Mm-hmm. Jose Altuve is arguably the best player in baseball, okay? Did he win MVP last year?
He
did win MVP last year. He's been in the MVP running for like 3 or 4 years. Anyway, this is what he said about Ozzie Albies. He said, he's better than me when I was 21 years old. Mm. He's better at 21 than I am at 28. Mm. I mean, like, so that last part, he kind of lost me. I mean, Altuve is at a Hall of Fame level and has been for a few years now. But I am buying that he sees Ozzie as more advanced than he was at the age of 21. But that's monstrous praise from one of the greats.
Absolutely. And that's somebody that Ozzie Albies has been compared to. And you always, when you go, all right, this guy's going to be the next Jose Altuve, you go, okay, wait a second. There's not many guys that are like 5'5 that can rake the way Jose Altuve can. Yet you turn around, you look at Ozzie Albies. And for me, the most surprising thing this entire year is the fact that he's got the power numbers that he had. I thought he might be a 10, 20 home run, absolute tops guy when he gets later on in his career. He's got, what, 13 already this year? I mean, Albies is flat out hitting the baseball. No, he's not going to be Jose Altuve, but you could see where Altuve looks and goes, all right, at the comparable ages, he's a better player because Albies is exceeding everybody's expectation.
He really is, man. So he can I mean, he's in the MVP race right now in the National League, believe it or not, and looks like if he doesn't make the All-Star team, we're going to freak out and, right. and file a collective Atlanta protest against that for what it's worth. I do think there's a good takeaway from this game, this loss yesterday, in terms of Foltynewicz, you know, dealing with some trouble, but going six innings and only giving up one run. Good look up there at Philadelphia, a very, very tough place to pitch where they score a lot of runs. And in terms of today, for the Braves and the guy they're going against, Velasquez, the last three starts, Velasquez has been very good. John, he has given up four earned runs in 17 and a third innings. So he is all of a sudden getting it rolling. He has 21 strikeouts over that span and has won all three of those games. So this is a guy who got off to a lousy start. The last three starts, Vincent Velasquez has been very, very good. So here we go tonight.
Well, you got to take advantage of him tonight if you can, because what do you expect out of Brandon McCarthy? 5 2/3, probably give up two or three earned, get you into the bullpen and give you a chance.
Yeah, I mean, at this point with McCarthy, John, you're kind of averaging what he does. I expect six innings, 10 Ks, one run allowed, or I expect him to get blown out of the building. You know what I mean? He's kind of a high and low guy this year.
Yeah, and that's what he's been. And he had a really good start his last time out. Can he back that up two times in a row?
Well, he's not at SunTrust Park.
That is true.
And we know that the home and away are much better for McCarthy away. So, dude, give us six solid innings, right? Mm-hmm. Get us to the sixth inning within a run or two, hopefully up. And then because obviously, John, we have one of the best seventh, eighth, and ninth inning hitting teams in Major League Baseball. I haven't seen the metrics, John. I don't know, maybe Graham McCauley knows this off the top of his head. I would say that we are the best two-out hitting team in baseball, if not in the top five. We've been awesome with two outs this year.
Interesting article out about the Braves. Jay Clemens, who writes and does stuff for 11 Alive, he says this, analysis, a creative plan for limiting Julio Teheran's starts at SunTrust Park. And he goes on to say the Braves should find a creative way to minimize their veteran ace home starts leading up to the Major League trading deadline. You know, just kind of some different ways. They said, should the Braves fully abandon the notion of starting Teheran at SunTrust Park? Should they be worried that Teheran's market value is going down? The answer is no and no. But in other words, he said, unless the Braves ship Teheran to an NL East club in the coming month, then Teheran's future employer would maybe max out with one SunTrust Park per season. He kind of breaks down all the different stuff. Would you be creative, if you were the Braves, to find ways to get him more road starts as opposed to home starts?
I don't know. It's really unconventional, perhaps unprecedented. I mean, they've been playing baseball since the Civil War. So, I mean, maybe it's happened at some point where they try to get a guy out of the way at home. But I don't think that Brian Snicker is going to roll that way.
Right.
I don't think Alex Anthopoulos is looking at it and going, yo, we need to hide him from SunTrust Park. I understand the article. I appreciate the article, but I just don't think in reality it's going to happen.
He actually goes through the schedule with a breakdown of how long Julio Teheran should pitch at SunTrust Park. He's got starts in Boston and then home against Washington. He said maximum 3 to 4 innings. Yeah, you can't do that. I mean, you can't go out and have one of your starting pitchers say, hey, I'm going to throw 3 or 4 innings. But
you know how baseball is, John.
Oh, yeah.
It's traditional. Mm-hmm. It's historic. You play the percentages. All those cliches are in play. Like, if you want to go to a six-man rotation, that's mind-bogglingly nutty, right? Teams do it from time to time, but it's extremely rare. I have never heard of a team going out of their way to get a guy to not start at home or start on the road. I've just never heard that.
Oh, you know what we're getting out of the way to do? That's play in our celebrity golf tournament. Grady Jarrett teaming up with Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Wednesday, June 6th, Top Golf in Midtown. That's right. We're changing things up. We're not on a traditional course. We're out at Top Golf. We're going to have a lot of fun. Grady Jarrett, Brian Jordan, Vic Beasley, Sean Weatherspoon, Harry Douglas, Takeo Spikes, Ray Lewis, Derek Shelby. Many more celebrities are going to be out there. Spots are very, very limited. So sign up today. Go to the events page at 929thegame.com to register. We're going to play some golf. We'll go out there and swing some sticks.
I love Top Golf. That's going to be a great event. Please go register, everybody. And real quick, shout out to Shane Carl. Shane Carl finally got hit last night, John. Gave up 2 runs in 1 inning. His ERA exploded to 1.33.
Ah, come on, Shane.
Come on,
supposed
Carl.
To be under 1. Hey, we take a break. We come back. Is Georgia Tech a top 25 team? One of the magazines I have here in front of me thinks so. We'll break down the Jackets next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and watch 92.9thegame.com.
Rick and John have the latest news from college football and want to hear from you. 404-741-0929. This is the College Football Cheat Sheet on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
We got you, Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets. We're talking Tech football in our College Football Cheat Sheet, and it's brought to you by R.S. Andrews. Keep cool. Get an R.S. Andrews Precision AC Tune-Up. Another way they make you smile at rsandrews.com. So the question today. According to Lindy's, Georgia Tech is a top 25 team. Do you agree? So John and I get back into another great debate here in the Kia Studios.
What becomes interesting for me with Georgia Tech is it seems like the years you don't expect anything from them, they jump up and win 9, 10, or 11 games. The years you do expect something from them, all of a sudden they go 5-7, 6-6, somewhere in that range. You go, what the hell just happened to them? But Lindy's does have, and I'm trying to find the exact page here, but Lindy's does have Georgia Tech as the number 25 team in their preseason rankings. I also have the Athlon College Football one, and here's Georgia Tech, and I'll read you exactly what they say about the Jackets. In up year, Jackets will be running wild. Good news, Taquan Marshall sure can run the option. Both he and Kervante Benson were 1,000-yard rushers, and they're back to kick things up a notch. When the Jackets are rolling, the run game is crushing foes. Changing defensive coordinators with Ted Roof out and Nate Woody in had to happen. Here's the hour call. We're betting on the running game, but you probably figured that out already. It should be unconscionable enough for the Jackets to surprise a lot of people. So they're 25 in one poll. If you go over to Athlon's and you take a look at them in the preseason, they have Georgia Tech as 42nd. They predict them to go 7-5. Where do you think they land when it comes to this year? Somewhere in the top 25 or closer to 7-5?
All right, so 2014 is how far I had to go back to find the last time Georgia Tech was ranked to end the season. Okay, 2014, they went 10-3. They had a banner year. They were 12th in the land to end the season. Great season for Georgia Tech back in 2014. 15, 16, 17, not ranked last year, not even bowl eligible.
Wow, they didn't finish ranked in 16
because
they went, what, 9-4 that year?
I don't have, I just have the rankings up, but no, they have not made the top 25 to end the season since 2014. I'm going to say no, John, and here's why. I do not perceive Georgia Tech to be a top 25 team. However, I do think that they're a non-top 25 team with the tangy zip of upside that could get them into the top 25. So I'm not, you know, completely dissing them. I just, to start the season, I would not have them top 25, and here's why. They have a problem on the defensive side of the football.
Yep.
In their secondary. All of the guys that played last year, and Lance Austin, Lawrence Austin, Step Mitchell, Corey Griffin, all played in each of Georgia Tech's 11 games. They all gone. And in terms of pass rush, you know, the yin and the yang to it, they were terrible in pass rush last year, 108th in the nation, 1.5 sacks per game. And their top sacker last year, defensive end Antonio Simmons, used up his eligibility. So he is done. And they don't really know. Like Cortez Alston is a guy that I'm reading that could become their top pass rusher. But to me, John, I don't really have questions about the offense. Taquan Marshall will take his game to another level. Kervante Benson will once again be a 1,000-plus guy. They will put points on the board. I just don't see them keeping the other team off the board. I think there's going to be a lot of high-scoring coin flip games with Georgia Tech.
They switch from a 4-2-5 to a traditional 3-4, which potentially with some smaller outside guys to rush can give them more blitzing and whatnot. Georgia Tech returns six guys that were listed as starters on the defensive side of the ball. But they've got nine guys back offensively. When you have nine guys back running a precision offense the way that they do, I think they're going to give some teams some trouble. But here's the rub when it comes to Georgia Tech. This schedule is a bear. A bear. You know, you start looking at Clemson early in the season. Now, granted, you get Clemson at home. You've got to go to Louisville. Those are your two crossover games. You know, you don't get Syracuse. You don't get Wake Forest. You get Louisville and Clemson. You're at Pitt, a team that seems to be back on the ascension, at Virginia Tech, at North Carolina, at Georgia, and then you get Miami coming to town.
Whoa.
That is a huge schedule to navigate. I would err more towards the side of 7-5, 8-4, get back to a bowl. outscore some people with their offense. But that's a lot to ask when you have that group in front of you.
With a new defensive coordinator, a new defense, a bunch of new players on defense, I agree. I think 8-4 would be a really good year for Georgia Tech. I really do. And I'd be happy for them. I think, dude, there are several. They're losing to Georgia this year. They're losing to Clemson this year. I think they're going to lose to Miami this year. You know, help me out, John.
At Virginia Tech.
At Virginia Tech is probably an L for Georgia Tech. And Tech fans, again, not trying to throw shade, just breaking it down, real talk. I mean, do Tech fans think that they're beating those teams? I mean, if you do, good for you. I don't view it the same way. So I see at least four losses on that schedule, John. And then you know how it's going to go. They're going to get in some 48-45 thriller with North Carolina. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And Pitt. Pitt's probably 38-35. You know, a lot of their games are going to come down to, I believe, that fourth quarter. And then it's going to be, yo, Taquan, they know what you're going to do here. You're going to run the triple. Like, can you make a throw here and there? That's what's going to take Georgia Tech to the next level for me. If Taquan Marshall can just add a little more spice in the passing game.
Listen from a year ago. You lose to Tennessee on a two-point conversion. So there's a loss. You lose to Miami on a last-second field goal. There's loss number two. They lose really close to Virginia by four. That's three. So you literally could have very easily had three more victories a year ago. Now, Clemson pretty much dominates you. They do beat Virginia Tech a season ago. Duke is the loss you look at and go, how the hell did we get blown out by Duke? That's the one you scratch your head. And then Georgia was just a better football team.
Do me a favor. Go back to Georgia Tech's schedule. We are wondering, ladies and gentlemen, Lindy's, a great source for college football information, has Georgia Tech in the top 25. John and I don't agree with that. We think they have upside to be in the top 25, but not to start the season. I want you to look at their schedule last year, and let's look at how many 50-50 like coin flip games they were in.
There was three 50-50 games.
That's it?
Yeah. They lost six. Three games they got housed. Georgia, Duke, and Clemson, they were dominated. 50-50 game against Tennessee, should have won probably. 50-50 game against Miami, in all honesty, probably should have won that game. 50-50 game at Virginia, probably should have won that game. Their wins, they beat Virginia Tech by six, so I guess that's a 50-50
game.
Beat Wake Forest by 14, no. Blew out North Carolina, blew out Jacksonville State, blew out Pitt.
Interesting. I mean, they were a little
They were 1-3 in 50-50 games.
There you go. And I see a lot of 50-50 games for Tech this year. I am intrigued by Taquan Marshall, though, and he's very, very fun to watch. So Tech football, I think, will be pleasing to the eye this year. I really do. And I know people are like, what are you talking about? They never throw the football. I get that. I'm just saying the way that triple option offense works with Taquan Marshall a year older, Kervante Benson a year older. Like, if you like running the football, it's going to be a great watch.
Well, I also look at the two A-backs, Clinton Lynch and Quay Searcy. You're talking about senior, senior, junior, senior in your backfield. When you run a triple option, the more times you get repetition, the more the pitch relation is perfect, the more that Taquan Marshall knows when to give it to Kervante or pull it back out. I think offensively they're going to give a lot of people problems. It's just, can they take the switch? And let's be honest, Ted Roof's defense was terrible. So maybe with Nate Woody, they're going to be more aggressive defensively. If they can cause some turnovers and make some plays, let that offense work like Novocaine and just grind you down, they got a chance to win some games.
What is Georgia Tech going to do to fill Ricky June's shoes? Ricky June went to the Rams, right? Undrafted free agent, wasn't it? LAR that picked him up. But Ricky June is gone, and obviously he was a big-time playmaker, albeit in a small sample size for Tech.
They've got Brad Stewart, a senior, Jalen Camp, a junior, Adonikis Sanders listed as a freshman, and Jair Hawkins Alexander, a sophomore. So I don't know a ton about both of those guys. Brad Stewart played quite a bit last year. Again, you catch two or three balls in that offense per game, you're pretty darn happy.
No doubt about it, man. So, Tech, go get him, man. Prove us wrong. We got you on the outside of the top 25, but looking in with some upside.
We go around the 404 coming up next. What did Travis Schlink have to say to the morning show? You'll hear some of that next. Plus, more Julio conversation on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.